Will he tip the card?
I know I've said it before, but given the series of events that leads me into your studio today, Michael, I think there is something happening. There's something in the air.
We'll tip the card in. I'll tip the card this weekend.
Mick Sharkey joins Racing Pulse to preview the big races in Friday Form Focus.
Brenda Delaney once tipped the card. Warren Huntley tipped the card at Kilmore. This promo of Sharks, the problem with it is he's never done it. He's never likely to do it.
Never likely to do it. It's become a bit of a running joke, actually. You know what? During the carnival, people felt the need to accost me in public.
You don't handle accosting well, do you? You get a bit snarly.
Oh, I just...
See, I'm always a duck.
Intrigued. I'm always intrigued about how people read the situation. They think, I'm going to go over and give this bloke a piece of my mind. And sometimes you think, how have you thought that's a good thing to do right now?
What, because you're a machine?
No, I don't copy.
Are you a thrashing machine? No, you're not. I kind of like it, because I reckon it's any engagement's good engagement, type of theory. So you're going to end up getting abuse hurled at you after your tipping performance at Caulfield, or are you kind
of... Genuinely speaking, that's just sort of par for the course. It shouldn't be... The promo shouldn't be, I'm going to tip the car. The promo is going to be, I'm going to cop abuse.
Right? Or the promo should be you responding to the abuse.
Yeah. Tee off at the Shark, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if anyone wants to abuse Shark, you can find him at...
Line up.
...live gigs all around town.
Oh, good one last night.
I want to ask you about it, because I'm always fascinated by how we're living our lives post-lockdown, and a lot of things haven't come back to normal. Like, I was in Bali a couple of weeks ago. It is apocalyptically quiet at the moment. Staff, everything, there's staff issues everywhere. And one of the things that really suffered through lockdown was the live gig scene. You seem to be bouncing back with it?
Well, I sort of took the view, because I like going to the shows, during COVID when we couldn't, that when we got out again, it'll just go to everything. So that's what I'm doing.
How does Juzzy allow this?
She's pretty understanding. It helps that she's a hippie, so yeah.
Just goes into a zen corner whenever she
goes. Go with the vibe, and I stagger home at whatever after having my ears blown out.
Yeah. So what was the gig? What was the gig last night? Because you are looking. Let's say you're looking delicate.
Tinnitus is still got a hold on me. Regurgitator at the Prince last night.
Yeah.
Sort of, I don't know.
What sort of a crew? Are you the old bloke there?
No, it was a mixed crew, because they sort of transcend a few different generations, and they've kind of just been around forever. And they're just a grouse band. They're a good sort of party band and good fun. It's always a good show. And yeah, Prince Band Room's a good venue too.
Nice and dimly lit.
Yeah, but it shares something in common with the Corner Hotel. It's got a pillar, like this, just this pillar in the middle of the... In the middle of the stage, so you've kind of got about a metre and a half from the absolute front. I'm not a front centreman. Like to get a little bit of room, and this pillar is right there, right in the middle.
So it's not designed for it.
No, it's holding up the roof, obviously, but it shouldn't be. It is a design flaw, as you say. Shouldn't be in that space, in that place.
Be like having a pine tree at the 200-metre mark at Caulfield or something like that, 3 metres out from the rail.
Yeah, it's a very odd place. Like, it was clearly, well, maybe it wasn't a music room. It's like a venue at one point. It might have been a storeroom or something. But, yeah, it's much like the Corner Hotel. It's just this whopping great pole in the middle of your line of sight. So
I'm sure Tim Bailey can associate with things that he just does not want to get in the way of a good show or a good race. How are you, Tim?
I'm well, thanks, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, you're a regurgitator man like Shark.
Oh, not really. Not my kind of music.
No, nor me. I keep thinking I'm going to ask you about Sandown. I haven't quite adapted yet. How's Caulfield?
Yeah, Caulfield's in good condition. We've had quite a dry last few days, at least here. Although, having said that, it's actually, believe it or not, it's drizzling here now. So that's pretty constant, isn't it? But yeah, we're on a good fall. Tomorrow's going to be, or the forecast, be 27 degrees and very strong northerly, so I've got to put irrigation on the track, obviously, so we don't get too firm, because this track will firm up significantly tomorrow in those conditions. So, good fall this morning. We're putting on 10 millimetres now. That'll be completed by about 2 o'clock, and then I think it'll be a genuine fall in the morning that will improve during the day.
You're going to have to tip a swimming pool on it, aren't you? 27 degrees in a northerly.
Yeah, we put on 10 millimetres yesterday and 10 millimetres today, so and the soil moisture, because we've had so much rain, obviously last 6 months or whatever, the soil moisture is really high for here. It's up about 28% this morning, and it'll get close to 30% with this 10 mils today. And So that means there's obviously good moisture right through the profile. So, I'm content that we'll have enough moisture in it. But, any track really, once you get 27 degrees and 40 kilometre wind, they will dry up and firm up, especially on top.
And, Tim, after the races, of course, there's, speaking of music, there's a band DJ playing and the patrons are allowed on course. So I'm imagining there's a bit of a renovation to follow after that, after the punters get on the track.
Is it like when you get kicked out of a house, it's about to be demolished, you can just do whatever you damn well like? Can people just trash the joint tomorrow after the last?
Not really. You might get a few
extras in if we can give a holler out to all the thugs out there who want to come and smash a few windows.
Yeah, not really. We do, we do want to resume racing here in 6 months' time, so we have got that 6 month break. But I've said to our operations team, no glass on the track. Or and I think Matty Kane, our chairman, I don't think he was aware that that part of the track were actually not getting any work done on it. So he did say on racing.com at one point that come in and take your own souvenir turf home from Caulfield, but that certainly won't be allowed.
Okay, we better stipulate that just in case.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's get that tile of grass.
Yeah, the area track is getting ripped up, or the main track are up there near the 1200 chute. So, if people are thinking of bringing their own shovel, please don't, because we do. We're not renovating that part of the track.
All right, just take us through what the amenities are going to be like on Saturday, because there might be a nice crowd out there especially given it's going to be 27 degrees, but just the access on the day, and then just tell us about what's going to play out. Just remind us, and again with the role of Sandown as well, what the story is with Caulfield and Sandown in the next 6 months or so.
Yeah, look, tomorrow there's certainly a couple of little bit of limited access. The construction's taking place where the new manning yard and race day stalls will be going. Exactly the same as over the carnival time. So the people who are familiar with it over carnival will be basically the same process and access tomorrow. So whilst it's limited, or less space than normal here, but I think they're hoping to get around about 8,000-10,000 people on that here tomorrow, and that'll be more than comfortable. We had, I think, about 24 on Cup Day, and that didn't seem overcrowded. So certainly won't be too crowded, and I think it's 27 degrees. I think hopefully people get out because it's about time in Melbourne. We've had a bit of sun and warmth. And your question about Sandown, they'll hold, I think it's 10 meetings from here at this stage, which are all either Saturday or public holiday meetings. And we're scheduled to come back here and resume here in May. That's a bit up in the air at the moment. Everything would have to go perfectly well for us to be here in May. It might be more like June, I think, before we actually resume racing here. But it certainly would be June at the latest.
You know that little pool you put there sometimes, and it never works out because it's always 35 degrees, and then on the day when the patrons come in to use that little pool, it always dips to 13. That'd be a good day to bring it in tomorrow, wouldn't it? 27 degrees, the little kiddie pool?
It would have been. I don't know what's happened to that pool. I haven't seen it.
It's a Moz. The pool's a Moz. It brings in a cold front every time you put it in.
You're right. So maybe it's probably best we leave it out. Yeah, I think there was one nice weather day for it here.
You know the lovely setup that you had on Caulfield Cup Day with those bars and so on. Are there any remnants of those, that sort of get up for those who go to Caulfield tomorrow? Those sort of amenities?
Yeah, certainly. I'm just looking out on the front lawn now. They've been here all week. They're putting up marquees but some structures, and I think it must be the DJ's booth or whatever they have now. These younger generations, Matty, and so it's sort of temporary bars and everything. So the place is going to look really well, and I think the crowd will be well catered for and have an enjoyable day if I turn up.
Good on you, Tim.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Good luck. It looks like, Shark, it's going to be an unavoidably firm deck because of just simply the weather. It's going to be a good four. Tim's going to water it today. And we probably haven't seen a firm Caulfield for a while because we had a pretty wet spring.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's some horses across the card too that are probably looking for better ground, as opposed to what they've struck in the last couple of months. And it's that, I guess it's that meeting, isn't it? There's a bit of a float over from the Flemington Carnival with the two provincial cup meetings, and then they sort of drift on into Sandown and the opportunity to freshen up and whatnot. So I think we're going to see some form lines turn around, given the wet tracks for the majority of the spring, getting on top of the ground again.
The last year's Zipping Classic meeting, Carl Diorio did an interesting piece on .com about how it rated down. second year in. I think it still needs to build a bit if it's ever going to, for the parlaying of the quality of the racing across to Sandown. I think the there's a couple of nice enough races, but there's a couple of pretty skinny ones, including the Zipping Sandown Guineas, and I'd say the Sandown Cup as well. So it probably just needs to still find that rhythm to convince people to go on again for one more race meeting.
I think so.
Especially now that we have Champions Day.
Indeed. It was the party meeting last year, if you remember, when everyone got loose, freed from the ties that bound during COVID. So it had a great atmosphere last year. I took the kids and they went absolutely hog wild because the rest of the crowd were. So it was pretty contagious last year. So, yeah, hopefully it was a similar sort of vibe tomorrow.
All right. Well, someone who's going to vibe right up tomorrow is Danny O'Brien, who's got the old champ, the old Melbourne Cup champion, Vow and Declare, who has hung about for one more race this spring, and that is in the Zipping Classic. How are you, Danny?
I'm well, thanks, Matt.
That's good, mate. That's good. Is there one last dance in Vow and Declare tomorrow?
Look, he came through the Cup very well. He's taken all these races this spring particularly well. And, you know, it's a tempting race. I think getting back on a good three, good four is a big plus for him. We've been happy with his performances so far this spring.
That'd be the absolute key, wouldn't it, Danny, getting back on top of the ground? You know, his Bart Cummings run when he didn't have a lot of luck in that with weight in a slow run sprint home, it was probably one of his best runs for the preparation.
You're right. Like he's been effective enough on, you know, soft six, soft seven, but he's definitely better when he can get on a good three, good four. So, yeah, I think coming back to that surface will do him the world of good there tomorrow. And obviously, you know, his last two runs have been in a Caulfield and a Melbourne Cup, so it's a good step back in grade for him too.
How unusual in modern times with these well-draining tracks and the usual weather to get rain-affected tracks in both the Caulfield Cup and the Melbourne Cup. So that was a curveball that affected a few horses and probably yours well and truly one of them.
Yes, look, yeah, as you said, you know, 9 years out of 10, we're on good force in almost every spring meeting, but this has been a very much out of the ordinary weather event this spring, and, you know, we're still really wet most of the state at the moment, so we're lucky getting back to Caulfield there on Saturday. We'll have a really good track.
Is it, with Champions Day now implemented as a kind of a curtain closer, really, it feels like a curtain closer, is the Zipping going to have to be one of those works in progress as far as convincing trainers, owners, everyone that there's one more meeting to go in the spring with the delay from Champions Day? Is it still a work in progress, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, they've scratched the surface on this, but, yeah, there's a lot of racing that we're doing in the back end of August and even through September that would be much better off running in November, December. You know, if we could push everything back a month, it would probably suit us a lot better. You know, the horses would do a lot better coming out of the spring a bit later into their key target races. And I think we just got to get people's head around the fact of, you know, the so-called spell that they have after spring is not the way horses are trained anymore. And, you know, it's often a shame that a lot of these horses are just starting to do well in the first week of November and then there's nothing for them to run in.
We see that in the UK, don't we, Danny? There's the early sort of spring meetings with the classics sort of tied in around that. And then there's, I guess, not so much a lull, but a bit of a summer carry through to those European sort of autumn group ones. You know, it's, we're sort of building a similar thing here in Victoria with, or well, in Australia as well, I guess, with the Magic Millions Carnival in January and sort of listed in group three racing through summer in Melbourne.
Yeah, we definitely are. Yeah, we're just stuck with, you know, a historical, it's an anachronism now that we don't have really good racing in December and January because they're two of the best months to put it on. Mm. They're two of the months where the horses themselves are at their peak physical conditions. But yeah, just because of our calendar evolved in the late 1800s, early 1900s, we're stuck with these things that really don't make sense in 2022.
They do look better in late spring, summer, autumn, don't they? Like, I was just watching some minor races the other day, a maiden race parading some country track, and every single one of them looked like a Cox Plate horse. It's amazing how much they flourish at this time of year compared to that August-September look, Dan.
No, definitely. Yeah, that's not hard to understand. You know, all animals sort of start their bodies, come good through the spring. That's when they breed, and they're all very, very well at the back end of the spring and into the summer. So, no, look, I think Caulfield's to be applauded for really progressing this, and I know RBL is looking at it even further. So hopefully things evolve. You know, sometimes they don't happen overnight, but we're trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm starting to look good coming into summer. I'm peaking.
The bikini bod's looking
good. Yeah, the budgie smugglers are just roaring at me to be reused. By March, Dan, I'm going to be irresistible.
You're like a big stayer, Matty. You come out of the paddock a little bit big, and then you just got to sort of be molded and shaped just across a prep.
But perhaps when you said all animals, you meant most animals.
I meant young animals that are in the prime of their careers.
Did you think, after 2019, when Van der Clare won the Melbourne Cup, did you imagine that you'd still have him as a competitive stayer this far down the track?
Look, he's only seven. So, yeah, a lot of stayers are still very much in their peak years then. But he hasn't done a hell of a lot of racing from various setbacks. He's had a very light last 18 months before this spring, so... we're pleased that he's held together. He was coming off a tendon injury this time last year, so to be able to get him back this spring has been a great result for us all, for the owners and myself and the stable, and it'd be great if we could get another win on the board with him there tomorrow.
It's a light weekend as far as runners for your team is concerned, but you've got Black Comb going around at Cranbourne tonight as well, and she was a filly that contested a VRC Oaks and, sort of flirted with listed grade three-year-old form out over a trip. How's she come back this time around, second up tonight?
Look, I thought she didn't have the clearest passage there first up at Pakenham. So she all but had a barrow trial there. She seems to be in good shape since, and she's trying to get a nice run there tonight. So, as you said, on her previous form as a younger horse, you'd expect her to be in the finish there tonight.
Danny, to my eye, you're one of those trainers who's happy to sit on the sidelines for a while and just sort of cool your jets and just keep things going and strike when you're ready. And spring for a lot of trainers was fairly quiet, and you were certainly one of them. Are you thinking about sort of the January, February, March, April sort of period? Have you got some nice horses coming through to pepper that time of year?
Oh, yeah, I think, things go in waves. Like we came up short with a lot of the horses we were hoping for this spring. We had, of course, my Mav won a Group 1 for us, and Saracen Knight actually was one of the best performances of the spring in the Herbert Power, and unfortunately had a little issue coming out of that. I think Emissary and a couple of other horses behind him that day went on and were factors. So, no, the wheels fell off a few of the things that we were hoping to achieve this spring, but, that's racing. You just got to keep turning up, and whatever the week of the year is, you're always hoping that the horses you're getting ready are going to, win or run well and go on to bigger and better things.
Are you more comfortable prepping them up, especially with 13th Beach, through the summer when the horses are thriving? Do you feel more comfortable with them aiming up at races now in, say, February, March?
They're not that complicated to get ready once they're fit and well over the summer. You just tick them over. The hardest time to get horses ready is coming out of the winter and into the early part of the spring, because you're dealing with facilities that are sometimes under pressure from the weather. The horses themselves are not really ready to be put under too much pressure, and it's a lot easier in my mind anyway to train horses at the back end of the spring than it is at the start.
Can I twist your arm to come down to the Jericho on Sunday?
Look, I love watching the event from afar, and I love racing at Warrnambool, but I haven't got any runners, so once I've got something that's in it, you'll definitely see me there.
Right, beautiful. Good on you, mate. Good luck with the old champ in the zipping tomorrow.
Thank you.
Danny O'Brien there, 23 minutes after 9. He's always been strong on that. He's always strongly believed that the calendar should be flipped on its head and we should thrive in the summer months. The European summer is very much that way. I'm not as big on it as I once was, because I think there is a continual transition at this time of year, Shark. I think we've gone from the spring carnival into the warmer weather, where the focus does turn to these big country races and the Jericho and then the picnics and then the Christmas stuff at Moonee Valley. I think it does roll on, but it just sort of rolls on in a slightly different way.
And the
warmer months go to the tracks that appreciate it most, the beautiful picnic tracks and the country cups and the Jericho and the night racing at Moonee Valley. So to me, that they are as well suited to the better weather as the big stuff in town.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, I know you do, but I kind of dig that flow in Victoria, so, that it's holiday season, it's the festive season, it's our big summer break, people head to the bush or the beach, and there's these little pokey picnic tracks that you can go and discover and enjoy.
And sit under a tree.
Yeah, I know my family will end up heading down to Stony Creek at some point over the summer and catching up with friends who are sort of staying in that Inverloch Venus Bay area, and you sort of meet at the racetrack, and not so much about the racing, but it just becomes that meeting place. And yeah, well, from a summer perspective, the Magic Millions Carnival is the carnival. Like that's the beacon during the summer, and rightly so. You know, you've got the big sale on, all the people up there buying and whatever else. It's the right place for that meeting. And then attention shifts again and comes back to the sprint series in Melbourne, and then rolls on through the Australian Cup and then rolls
too.
Back to the autumn. Yeah, absolutely it does.
And the Christmas New Year period to me is when people vacate the city. So why would you want to have... And that's when they do end up at Woolamai and Hillsville and Balnarring. They're more likely to be down that way than they are to be still going to the races in town in December. So now I kind of think I feel a bit differently than I used to about it. 25 minutes past nine. When we come back from this break, we're going to have a look at the Supreme Caravan Race of the Week. It's the Zipping Classic, which is now going without a fight.
Inside the weekend's biggest races, RSN 927's Racing Pulse and Friday Form Focus.
28 past nine. I'm just thinking with the Tony Carbone ad there, Shark, have you ever had to say to anyone, hold it, I just need to call my lawyer? Have you been in a lawyery situation before?
Well, my dad's a lawyer or a barrister, or he was.
So you just say, hold on, I just got to call Dad.
Just got to call Dad. Yeah, just get some advice here on the fly.
Because I watch a lot of those crime docos, and it's always like when they're interviewing the cops, and then the bloke says, yeah, you got me, now it's time to call my lawyer.
Yeah, my best mate's a lawyer, and often you'd ring him and he'd say, what have you done? Mm. And yeah, was kind of think, don't know if that's the answer you want when you're ringing your friend up, but he knows me well, put it that way.
I was watching one last night, and you watch it, it's got the CCT footage when they're interviewing and they've absolutely got him, and he just sits there and he goes... Is this now, he asked the cop, he says, is this now where I tell you I need to call my lawyer? So I'd definitely call Tony Carbone. Absolutely.
Would you?
Yeah.
Do you like the ad where he's waving it? Like he's
and then,
he's, down the street
and then he goes in the
nobody.
Side door.
Yeah,
and then he goes
he's
side
like,
door.
Hey, hi. Like, he's so well known. Look, he's helpful. He helps people. That's
he's
what he does.
And he's huge, actually. I
asked
a lawyer mate of mine, I said, how big is this outfit? He said, it is huge. So if you want to go big, go with Tony Carbone.
The firm is huge.
The firm is
huge. I thought you meant he was huge.
No, he's like, normal proportion.
Just a normal size gentleman.
Yeah, 6 foot, 5'11", about
I like
95 kilos.
Goatee beard as well.
I had one of those.
Did you?
Ticklers.
In Portugal?
Yeah. Pat Hyland rang me up one day and said, my wife says that's disgusting. You've got to get rid of that horrible thing on your face.
Right. Was that a European vacation edition?
I removed it because of Marie Hyland. She was so offended by it.
Oh.
Hey, the Zipping Classic, were you offended by the scratching of Without a Fight? Sam Friedman wasn't.
No. Look, they've got to do what they've got to do, the vets, so... If he's not right to play, he can't play, sadly.
In the Supreme Caravans Race of the Week, by the way. For
we
Supreme
love the Supreme
and
Caravans.
Yeah, we're going to have a chat to our man in a little bit later on as well. Travel in Style with Supreme, an Australian family business for over 37 years.
I actually really, really dig a couple of their units. I don't know if I'll be a caravan person. I don't know if my girls would sort of live in anything that wasn't, you know, a hotel on tour or a really nice beach house. They're a bit kind of...
Wouldn't your kids be impressed by a holiday home that can change location in an instant?
The little one would. Daisy would rock that, but she's a bit crazy like me and a bit earthy, likes to get outside, whereas the other two, not so much. But they're beautiful caravans. I like the territory, Maddie. I could see myself towing that around fishing spots up and down the East Coast.
We always had caravans. Michael Prosnick from Supreme Caravans is going to join us in about 45 minutes, and I want to ask him about the post... You know how I'm obsessed with post-COVID lockdown, what people are doing?
Yeah, buying vans.
I would imagine that buying vans is a pretty high priority for a lot of people. Anyway, back to the Supreme Caravans Race of the Week. So there's no Without a Fight. So now Vow and Declare... It's a bit of a favourite by default situation, I think.
I guess it is, yeah. Yeah, and he deserves to win a race, doesn't he? He's been... His previous preparations, I think they probably lacked a bit. I spent some time with Paul Lansky and the owners and his family, who obviously bred the horse as well, on Caulfield Cup Day. And they were just so thrilled with how this horse has come back, this preparation. He ran a great race in the Caulfield Cup, tried really hard, ran sixth there. back to the scene of the crime, I guess you'd say, off the back of that. He's yet to win at Caulfield from seven starts, but I think that's a little bit misleading because he's run some really good races. I think he was fifth in a Caulfield Cup the year that he won the Melbourne Cup, wasn't
yep.
he? So
yeah,
it's,
he
like, it's not as if he doesn't get around the track. He's just probably running strong races there when he hasn't been ready to peak. He's really, really hard to beat in this race. But down the bottom, so is Luntzes, I think. That run in the Geelong Cup was so brave from a wide gate. And then obviously proved that when he turned up in the Queen Elizabeth and ran an absolute stonker behind Solcombe, who was rampant on that occasion.
Mm.
I think Solcombe, we all know that that's a sort of talent that we'll be talking about come Caulfield and Melbourne Cups next year. So, for Luntzes to run so well behind him, I think it gives him a really good shot in this race.
I'm just going to have a little look at the betting because I've got a feeling that Luntzes might run favourite here.
Yeah, he's the one I'd back. What about you? What are you thinking?
Oh, no, the app is having a mood again.
Well, do you want me to tell you? Because I've got it in front of me. Van der Clare, $3.80. Luntzes, $4.20.
Well, that might switch around. That might switch around a little bit, Don Race. Let's just go, I want to go horse by horse because there's only a small take up and every horse has got a mini case, I reckon.
Yeah.
Van der Clare.
We've talked about
actually, I was talking to JD Hayes the other day about the returning horses from Hong Kong and obviously Redcap Warriors, and there's a lot of them these days. And
Dark Dream.
Dark Dream was a returner. He's the one I don't like.
Yeah, it's hard to like him, isn't it? I think a good track. He probably wants his toe in to a degree, but not as heavy as he's been getting recently. He's not getting badly. I just didn't see enough last week in that Ballarat Cup to sort of charge into him this week.
We just did an interview earlier with the trainer of Wayne Seal and the trainer of Isarich about old Isarich, and brings us to Sound to prove that age cannot weary them on this Jericho weekend. And Sound, I've backed him to win the last two Zippin Classics. Yeah, no, I've got him both times. Last year he was 20-1. What do we make? And I backed him when I was on my way down. I was in Warrnambool in a shopping centre car park when he won. Okay. I was at a bottle shop.
Oh.
As you do. Right, so Sound, has he got one last big run in him tomorrow?
You could probably argue he's going just as well as he was last year. Maybe half a length off that sort of form, but look, it was a good, tough win in last year's race. It's a similar sort of setup for him this year, isn't it? Small field, very even field. You wouldn't write him off completely, would you?
Is one of these going to, like Sound did last year, take, and it's happened before in Zipping Classics, where a horse's, Who Shot the Barman did it with James McDonald a few years ago. Is one of these going to go, right, I'm fit now, I'm going to catch these all on the hop? It'll either be Sound, or could it be Persan?
I think Persan is probably the most likely to turn the form around. Like he's threatened all spring. JRA Cup run when he returned second up. I just thought that was a ripping effort when he needed the run. And then close up in a Herbert Power. Yeah, okay, it was a bunch finish and maybe the form out of it people want to question. But it was still a good effort. Moonee Valley Cup, good effort. Queen Elizabeth, he was right up there. Just probably disappointed a shade late in that race, but he did give weight away to horses of similar ability. So back on weight for age terms, I think he's the one that could really throw forward here. And, you know, I'd imagine he'd be sort of $7 to $9, that sort of range tomorrow.
Just on these horses, there's a few old codgers here have got little gear changes. Van der Clare, Declare Winkers, first time. Dark Dream blinkers on again. Winkers off again. The Hayes boys don't mind a tinker.
Yeah.
Persan blinkers off again. Crossover noseband off first time. And then a horse, this is interesting in a way, because he gallops well. He's a good galloper, Chapada, but he has completely forgotten the winning habit. He's got a little gear change, blinkers off. Is there any... He's as good a galloper as any of them, Chapada, but he just goes through the motions.
Well, earlier in the spring, I thought he was flying. You know, the Heatherly run, great. Naturalism run, great. Turnbull run was really good because he got a mile back in a race that became a sit sprint, and that's not his go. The last two, Caulfield Cup, it was a Caulfield Cup, but I just thought he'd hit the line a bit better. And then the Archer was sort of plainish. Has he just sort of lost that early form that he had this spring? I'll be inclined to risk him here.
I remember he was a good thing beaten James McDonald I was on him this day in the Victoria Derby about 3 or 4 years ago, and McDonald got off and said, "This horse is a superstar," and it just never happened
really
for Chapada.
Did it?
No.
Well, he's, you know, look at his record. He's at 40 goes of it as of tomorrow. He's won 3 races.
No, exactly. There's something missing there, and he's you know, Eye of the Tiger style. Waller's got 3 interesting ones. Which one can turn it around? Cucaracha, Great House, Desert Icon.
I think probably Great House out of those. Again, they're all similar horses, aren't they? Like, you could rinse and repeat what we just said about Chapada and Persan with Great House. He's a top-of-the-ground horse. Yes, he went to the Queen Elizabeth, and I think he was a bit flat there. At his best, if he produces runs like he did in the Macram race and the Turnbull, he'd be right in the finish of a race like this, but he's probably one that needs another win, I reckon, Matty.
And Luntzies is, I think it's your top tip, isn't it?
Yeah, I like Luntzies. Yeah, I'm happy to be with Luntzies here.
Had Without a Fight been in the race, would it have been your top tip?
He was the best of the day if he ran.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah. So complete reshuffle.
It is a little bit, yeah. Disappointed we don't get to see Without a Fight, because the Zipping Classic's often been a race that sees a couple of those imports sort of flow through from the Melbourne Cup. So, yeah, a bit flat that we won't see him in this race, but we'll see him again because now he's stabled here and stays on with the Freedmans.
Absolutely. All right, well, we might even have a little look at the first race and maybe the first couple, and then we might take another break. And the first race is completely opposite end of the spectrum. It's for the babies over 1,000 metres at Caulfield. Every time I'm thinking about one of these races, I'm visualising Sandown for some reason.
Yeah.
So the first race is for the babies, and number 10, James Cummings seems to be the man. Mark Zara Blake Shin, the key jockeys here. Remedies is number 10, is the $2.90 fixed odds favourite, just from the stablemate Cylinder. Number 2 at $3.10, and then Little Bros out to $10. Which, is Zara the one who would get the pick if there was a pick or not?
Yeah, probably. You'd think so, wouldn't you? You'd think he'd have the choice of the trio of Godolphin runners. I don't mind this race, Matty, being at Caulfield, because it gives these horses a look at Caulfield prior to the Blue Diamond series.
Yep.
Which, you know, it's not far away when you think of it either, is it? It's probably, 8 weeks away till the Australia Day long weekend when we see those previews. So,
yep.
Yeah, it gives the early ones a sighter at Caulfield. I think they're going to have to be pretty slick to beat Remedies on what she showed at Cranbourne. That was a dominant win. Good speed, clean away, controlled the race, quickened up nicely off a leading position and won as she liked. I think she is definitely the one to beat. The biggest danger might come from the stablemate, though, Cylinder. She's a thump the line at Newcastle, that horse. It was pretty soft in the market, though. It was 360 to 460 on race day.
Yep.
So they weren't in love with it in the yard or anything like that, but you need to see him again here. Had been trialling up well before that. And of those we haven't seen before, Chalui, I'm not sure how we pronounce that, and Fludway, they would be my two of the untried from the trials and jump outs.
I think the one that, you know, breeding buffs will jump out, will be a little bit interested in is Hydrogen Power, first runner from the Autumn Sun out of a sister to Typhoon Tracy. And
yeah, beautifully bred.
We've seen the trials. Have you made anything of Hydrogen Power for the Price Kent Stoke?
Well, that's the thing with this time of year. Anything that's up and going now, early, they've shown something at the jump outs. Usually if they're not, then they're safe for another day on the other side of Christmas, aren't they? So yeah, Hydrogen Power's look like it's got better than average ability, you would say. So see where he measures up under race day pressure.
So what's the go here? Do you have an opinion, or are you got half an opinion because you want to have another look?
Yeah, just want to have another look. But I think Remedies, if you wanted to have a crack early, I think Remedies is probably the option.
All right. But it's still, I love them because of their little unopened presents, the two-year-olds.
Unopened presents. I like the way you described it.
Yeah, it's a Forrest Gump analogy, I reckon.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Matty Kamani's got a horse that's probably got his hoof on the till in team captain in the Sandown Cup over 2 miles.
And yeah.
Matty Kamani has been kind enough to join us. How are you, Matty?
Morning, guys. Good, thanks.
You well? Yeah.
Very good.
Team captain in the Sandown Cup. What do we make of it?
Yeah, I think we've been wanting to get into this distance for a long time now. And I would have preferred if it was at Sandown, but we'll see what we do at Caulfield. He's in really good shape. I'm very happy that he's fit and ready for it, but still got a bit of a zest and isn't too dour. So hopefully, if they turn it into a tactical affair, which quite often happens when you get small fields, hopefully he's still got enough kick to get out of a tricky position.
I was going to say, Matty, he strikes me as a big track horse, and when you look back at his preparation this time last year, when he raced his way out of, like, a standard handicap grade, all his good runs were on bigger tracks. So, yeah, Caulfield would have to be that slight concern, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And how we ride him is going to be a bit tricky. Hopefully there will be a tempo and it will be a genuine staying test. And if it is that, I think he's got a great chance. If he happens to get boxed in and they turn it into a sit and sprint because there's a few doubters about the distance, then it's going to be tricky. So the main aim for Declan is to make sure that he's got plenty of space. I don't think I want to go up to 32 and try and lead. He's not traditionally had enough speed from the gate. But if he finds himself in front, we'll go with it, of course. But ideally, we'd get a nice lead and have a bit of open air around us so that we can get going. Particularly if they go too slow, we can get going nice and early.
I was going to ask you about that exact thing. And you hear a lot of trainers say, oh, I just hope there's enough tempo in the race. And I sometimes think, I wonder if that individual trainer's horse can be the tempo maker if the tempo is not there. But then little weaknesses in the horse, like not enough natural speed and so on. But if it's becoming a bit frustrating for you and Declan Bates early on, is it possible that team captain can make the speed to suit himself?
Yeah, he's definitely got the right temperament. If he were to break well and find himself in front, I'd definitely go for it. Having said that, we're up to 3,200 and it becomes slightly less important. The further you go, the less, a slow tempo will have a negative effect on him. But I don't want to suddenly try and dramatically change things too much when we've finally got, conditions hopefully to suit, certainly in respect to the distance. So primary aim is to not go, it's not our main aim to go forward. But should we find no pace and no one willing to take that position, then we'll be happy to.
You know what I've noticed lately? I don't know whether it's just the one or two distance races that I've seen that they've both been the same. I reckon speed is being injected into these races a little bit more than historically is the case, Matt. I know there was a bit of a hullabaloo and Damien Oliver and Jamie Carr actually took it upon themselves in a couple of races to inject some speed. I think some of the distance races are being run at a more of a gallop than had been the case. Am I eyes deceiving me or am I just wishful thinking?
No, I think you're probably right. I have seen a few that tend to be going a little bit stronger. And I think, having horses like Twilight Payment win the Melbourne Cup from out front and showing what a good, clever judged ride out in front can do, I think certainly gives them a bit more confidence. But it does come down to confidence, I think, with jockeys. A lot of them just aren't confident enough. But when you're out in front, that's when you really get judged, I think, and on whether it was a good ride or not. I think people who slate jockeys because they got stuck on the rail or got into a tricky spot and had a wall of horses in front of them, it's just not a legitimate reason to have a go at a jockey. I think a legitimate reason is when the jockey's out in front and sets the wrong sort of sectionals, either goes too fast or on a one-pace day goes too slow and tries to sprint. I think you're opening yourself up for criticism when you're leading, so you need to be pretty confident and pretty good at what you're doing in order to do it. So I think that's why jockeys are quite hesitant to do it. But we've got very talented jockeys here in Victoria, and I think as they grow a little bit more confident and understand, particularly some of these European stares that come over that are one pace, I think they understand and see that the way to ride them is at a solid tempo. And if that means you're having to make it, then that gives you the best chance of winning.
Venetian Lass in the Sandown Guineas, has she been a victim of tempo in her races? She's a get-back run-on horse with a finish?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is a very, very tough race. We were hoping that it might be a traditionally weak Sandown Guineas, but it's probably a little bit tougher than we were hoping for. She's also drawn a bad gate and at a tricky track. So I think it's a day out of the races for the owners, and she can get on the rail somehow and be lucky, find a few gaps on the way through and finish off well, then hopefully she can get a little bit of prize money.
Hey, I think the Lloyd Williams horses, even though they weren't winning over the spring, they were all pushing on and running good gallops and setting up good races. There was a few of those. Maddie, you're running, this is a giveaway to the theme of the day on Sunday at Warrnambool. You've got three runners. One's running in the Banjo Patterson, one's running in the Harry Chevelle, and one's running in the Goodbye Albany, Farewell Australia, Benchmark 64. It sort of sums up the theme of the Jericho. Have you had the pleasure of competing on Jericho Day before?
Yes, we have. Couldn't tell you, can't quite remember who it was, to be honest with you, but we have, and it's a great day. Unfortunately, we've drawn very badly at Warrnambool for a lot of our horses, so it looks like we'll probably only have one runner, Arizona Dreaming, who's drawn barrier one, although typically I would have rather him drawn a bit wider. Hopefully we'll have a good day. We've also got a runner, Taralgan, to decide if she goes there. She's drawn a bit wide as well, so I'm not quite sure which direction I'll be heading in, but hopefully it's Warrnambool.
No, come to Warrnambool. We're going to have a bit of fun down at Warrnambool. Come.
Yeah.
Now, Banjo Patterson. I'm assuming you know who he is now, but did you know who he was before you came out here a few years ago?
No, and I didn't even know Banjo was the name that you might give to someone. But I've since been told very Aussie name, and obviously I know who Banjo Patterson is now, and I have read a little bit of his, I've got to get this right now, he's a poet, wasn't he?
I think prose, we'll go, sort of short stories, poet, all sorts of things, yeah. No, you flukily nailed it, yeah, well done.
Flukily nailed it.
He was so vague. Maddie, time of year coming up, the weather will warm up at Ballarat, yearling sales coming up, and we swing into the autumn pretty quickly. How are you looking for the next, for the summer period?
I think really good. We've got some lovely horses coming out for summer. The horse that was meant to run at Warrnambool, possibly still might, Max Mercury, I think it will, chance for getting some nice wins over the summer in town. And we've got horses like Hanadi and Tarantor coming back. I think Future Score is just hitting its straps for some of these later cups, and perhaps the Bagus on New Year's Day. So I think we'll be in for a good summer.
Beautiful. Good luck, and hopefully we'll see you at Warrnambool on Sunday.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Matt Kamani there. It's 11 to 10. We're overdue for a break. We'll take it now, and then we'll come back and have a look at... we'll move on to the third race at Caulfield. The noise you hear is us dragging the chain, Shark. Let's get your final thoughts for the Sandown Cup, and then we'll have a look at the Doveton Stakes, and then we'll take our sports update with Hollywood, and then we'll roar through the rest of the program.
Why not, Matty? Why not? Doveton Stakes, eh? Brookner, surely. Just...
Hang on, have you signed off on the Sandown Cup yet?
Oh, well, we should sign off. I've got a horse in the Sandown Cup.
Oh.
Papalino.
Oh, the Pap, yep.
Yeah, what could have been with this fella before he hurt his knee? What could have been? Anyway, he's going well. Is he going to win? Don't know, probably not. Needs a sting out of the ground, he's not going to get that. I sort of settled on protection money, hoping that Nigel Blackiston, who's a really good fella, can get a reward for effort, for a very consistent preparation with protection money. So that'd be the way that I'd go there, but not with a massive deal of confidence.
No, they're all a bit the same, aren't they? I'm a bit of an Aurora's Symphony man for that race.
Yeah.
Now, the Doveton, Cindy Alderson's done an amazing job with Jigsaw, who was a really good youngster and then lost his way, but then she's found the clue. And the trick is she thought that Jigsaw was probably better on rain effect ground, but as time has moved on, it doesn't seem to be the case. And now Jiggy Jig was terrific first up, and no surprise he's favourite again.
Jumped, ran, kicked, kept going. So maybe getting off wet tracks. I know he's on 4 out of 8 on soft ground, but I heard with interest Cindy after that race saying, maybe he's on a wet tracker.
Mm.
Well, didn't look like a wet tracker, did he, breaking a track record at Cranbourne on top of the ground.
And absorbing a lot of pressure and then kicking away.
Yeah, he did. It was a day to run quick time. The track was very slick on that occasion, so he was probably helped by that. As you'd expect in a 1,000-metre race, there's good speed here, and a horse like Yulong Command might go and just apply a bit more pressure to him. I'm wondering if it just sets up really nicely for Brookner.
Mm-hmm.
He's a class horse in the race, isn't he? That's why he's got top weight. McNeil Stakes winner beating Artorias, and Heresy is not a bad horse. Daniel Stakes place get a second in a Coolmore to Home Affairs. You know, it's a pretty serious form line. Yeah, he's been off the scene for 12 months, but it's a pretty serious form line. It's pretty hard to ignore. Trials have been good. Cranbourne just had a poke along. They took him to Hawkesbury, and, yeah, he really ripped up there and looked back to his old self. So Bruckner for me.
How do you think
the price?
You know who's a bit of a, one of the... There's a lot of these horses running to tomorrow who are going well but just simply not winning it.
Yeah.
You know he's flying, and I know he's a Moz horse.
Who's that?
Sartorial Splendor.
Yeah, going well. Yeah, he is. Going very well. He might be another little fly in the ointment for Jigsaw, though, Sartorial Splendor and Yulong Command, because they're all three of them are natural speed horses. I would assume Jigsaw and Daniel Moore might just want to take a little sit, if they can, on those two, rather than get caught in a little three-way head-to-head battle for the lead.
Yeah.
Rose Quartz is the other one that could improve. I thought she was great first up, second up. Just race didn't really pan out in her favour.
In the category of absolutely best placed this horse has been for a long, long time, but is he going well enough to win?
Yeah.
General Bow?
Well, exactly. Again, Scalacci run was encouraging.
He looks amazing every time in the mounting out because he's still a bull. He still looks amazing.
Yeah, rounded up. He's a big, strong horse. Yeah, at his best, you'd think he, like Bruckner, you know, they're probably similar style of horses, aren't they? That they'd fight this one out on class anyway.
Zara goes on. I mean, no knock. Damien Lane has been riding and Damien Lane's in Japan, but change is as good a holiday.
We don't lose anything with Zara, do
no,
we?
No, you certainly don't. And maybe the change might just sort of do something for General Bow. So I will be having something on General Bow because this is the best place he's been and he's won three races at Caulfield.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. All right. Just sum up your... So you think Bruckner's the class, but Jigsaw's the one who's flying.
Bruckner, man. Interested to see what Jigsaw can do. If Jigsaw can win this race, I think you look towards races like Standish and he's that emerging horse.
Yep.
You know, you often get one that just goes whack, whack, and then all of a sudden they're... Yep. You know, a short favourite for a Christmas Sprinter or a Standish or something like that. And you've got, you know, a little bit of a, not an X factor, but you've got a horse on the rise to look forward to.
I think he's a good cornerer. I'd love to see him continue to race around corners. All right, it's 10 o'clock. John Bowden is waiting in the wings. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more races at Caulfield to go, and then we'll have a look at the wintry bottom in Perth. It's 10 o'clock.
Inside the weekend's biggest races, RSN 927's Racing Pulse and Friday Form Focus.
Thanks to Hollywood there for the news. The fourth is over
14. Why is he Hollywood?
Look at him. He's Hollywood.
Okay.
I know. He just, every time I look at him, I think of glitz and glamour and
Hollywoods,
Hollywood.
Maybe, but yeah.
Yeah, no, no. Style icon, you know. You know.
Yeah.
All that. All right. He's been Hollywood for years. Race 4 is the Twilight Glow. He's got a Twilight Glow of his own.
You just ponder where the genesis of some nicknames come from.
Some of them are ironic, like redheads called Bluey and all that sort of stuff.
Some of us are born with them, so you don't have to. Yeah. No one has to get creative.
That's right,
so.
Shark. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. This looks a bit deep and tricky to me. A few maiden winners, a few lightly raced promising ones, a few with a little bit more exposed form in the Twilight Glow, race 4 at 220, and a pretty full field as well. So I probably should be reading out the markets in these races, shouldn't I? But my phone is not working properly.
Their expectation levels when you and I are on air are probably...
Quite low.
Probably just tempered a little bit from where... From the Fellgate regime?
Yes, Camp Fellgate. Two Grey River, $3.80 favourite. Nakoni is at $4.80 and the Unicorn, $8.50, $9.50. Geniala. Peter Moody, Peter and Sarah have accompanied Michael and Jackie to Japan, and Peter Moody sent me a photo two nights ago of Michael Fellgate in some sort of weird karaoke sushi bar.
Yeah.
Holding a wooden cup that he was obviously drinking sake out of.
Kanpai.
And Michael looked tired and emotional.
So the beauty of when the Fellgates go on holiday, if they're going to a nice location, i.e. Japan, and you think, I'd like to go to Japan, you could basically road test the entire country via Jackie's social media feed.
Yeah, no, it's feel like a step-by-step walk through Japan.
Well, now she's worked out how to post a video with commentary over it.
Oh,
which is so she's
matter
just
of time before she
it.
Learned that one.
Yeah, it's like her own little travel show. So yeah, you can road test with the Fellgates.
I'm just trying to find the Peter Moody text. I'll find it. You keep talking about the Twilight Glow.
This is a really, really, really tricky race. Some come through that Flemington Desirable Stakes won by Rosita. Grey River was super brave in that, sitting up on speed. I expected her to drop out, and Rosita just launched from the pack from nowhere with See You in Heaven, who was unlucky in that race for company. But Grey River stayed on really, really well. I was a bit of a query on her at 1400, but she saw it out strongly. She's your starting point, drawn wide in 10. There's a couple that might want to make her work early. I think it could be a slightly problematic gate, but, you know, I wrote her off last time and she was tough. Who's to say she won't be really tough again here? Then you're into these recent maiden winners. Oh dear. Yeah, that photo is a good one. We need to put that
He looks a bit flushed and like the sake didn't agree with him.
Yeah, It does look a bit like that. Jet lag, perhaps. We'll go with that.
I should send another text to Moody and say, send us the photo that you took an hour later.
Exactly. Yeah. When you're scraping him off the floor. Recent maiden winners in this race, there's a few of them. Jenny Lala, Get Up Girl, Cast, The Unicorn, Belmia. All of them have shown the amount of ability you would expect to translate to metropolitan class during the summer months, but it's a bit of a leap from a maiden to a listed race. At least when you take a step back and look at it, though, a lot of them are coming through sort of handicap races hobbling towards us anyway. So if you think that one of those maiden winners is eventually going to make a three-year-old off-season handicapper, well, they're only racing against those standard horses here. So
is that the qualification that we need to stress is the gap between the maiden winners and the supposed better form in this listed race is not very wide?
Yeah, I don't think it's huge. I don't think it's huge. I would have been really keen to back Grey River here had she drawn an inside gate, but from the wide gate, my enthusiasm is tempered somewhat. I'm interested in Jenny Lala as well. I just love the way she joined in at Moonee Valley. It wasn't a jump up on speed, go to the front, dominate the race. She took a little sit. She travelled really strongly, ambled up to them and just ran away from them. So again, 13's not a great draw. They would be the two I'm interested in watching here. I probably won't bet because of the negative barriers with the two horses I like.
All right. Now let's move on.
We're going to bet in this race. Race 5, we're going to have a bet.
Well, what I was going to ask you, this is the theme of the day for me, because I wouldn't mind having a chat to Nathan Doyle tomorrow morning at some point. Mm-hmm. Hopefully Warren won't steal him so I can have him all for my own between 11 and 12 with Dan Malecki. Because he's an interesting runner, Norwegian Bliss, because if it's not Norwegian Bliss, the out-of-towner, then what do you do about... This is the Kevin Heffernan, by the way, named after one of the great men.
Yeah.
The late, great Kevin Heffernan. Carol's dad, 1,400-metre, Group 3, wait for age. Because if you don't go to the out-of-towner, then suddenly you have to get your head around whether you think Poland can win.
Yes, and both Poland, Norwegian Bliss are on-speed horses, so you think they'll be right up there in the firing line. Crosshaven, I reckon, will push across from 7-2 and try and be handy. Streets of Avalon, he's probably lost a yard or two of his early speed these days as an 8-year-old, but we know that he can take a position if that's where they want to be. And from one, you wouldn't think Zach Spain would be giving up too much of a start. Norwegian Bliss is working her way through the grades pretty well. Doesn't blow fields away, just gets the job done. I've come around to the other mare in this race, Literary Magnate. Northwood Plume Run was really good. And then she showed that wasn't a fluke when she went to Flemington. Just probably got held up at a critical part of that race. But once she got out, she was full revs and strong to the line. It was a really bunched finish on that occasion. I think there was only about a length and three quarters over about 10 of them once they hit the line. So if you don't like that sort of form line, i.e. bunch finish, you might take her on. I just thought she was at the price again against the favourite, who may well be good enough to win this. And I think Literary Magnate, just giving you a little bit of fat there in the market, Matty. They put her up at 360, which I thought was a little generous.
This is a race meeting of horses that you have to force yourself to forgive if you want to proceed, like Poland. And then we get to Grand Slam in the Eclipse Stakes over 1,800 metres. And Grand Slam, pardon me as I squeak the microphone, is the $3.70 fixed odds favourite for a horse who Gee, it's been a while since we've benefited from Grand Slam.
Yeah.
Cyril Aomis is at $6. Keats, who's flying, is $6.50. French Emperor for birthday boy Mick Price is at $6.50. It's Mick Price's birthday today. Happy birthday, Mick. $8 Flash Feeling for John Sadler, number 12, and Montine is $10. But see, Grand Slam's a horse that I have benefited from time to time, but I never now know when I feel like I need to back him or not. But he was in the Ballarat Cup and they scratched him, and now he's running in the Eclipse Stakes. So
he just doesn't go on wet ground, does he? Well, that's the problem with Grand Slam. His wet track form is horrible. His good track form, well, he'd be winning this race. I thought he was all right at the Valley with, you know, 61 and a half on his back. It's just he didn't go forward and lead. He obviously wasn't ready to do that. You'd think second up 15 to 1800 in a race where Craig Williams can get forward quickly, be up there with the likes of Cyril Aomis and Keats for company, gives him a super chance in this race. And again, like what you just touched on, you're sort of talking yourself into some of the other ones. Flash Feeling was a good winner at Flemington, but he's a 76 rater. Keats has been going well through the grades, but on tracks with some give in them, doesn't get that here.
He might have a few mates up there with him too, Keats, this time.
He may well, yeah. Mm. Montine is going really well in Adelaide. I thought he was a real life chance in this race at a price. Like, he, if you watch his South Australian replays, he's kind of been building he's got a 50% strike rate, but he's been building that strike rate kind of off-Broadway without much notice. He gets back in his races, he blends in and he really thumps home. He's carried weight and won. He had 59 kegs on his back last time when he won over 1600. I think he's better on top of the ground. I reckon at $10, he's a little each-way play for me in this race, Matty.
I should have done proper research, of course, but did Sosie Bond win this race last year or the year before?
Sosie Bond.
There's a few races
he's
won before. Like,
he hasn't won it last year. His track and distance is two starts for no placings. But
whether he won it at Sandown?
I think you're thinking of the Vobis Mile, potentially.
I might be. All right, so just sort of summing up, how do you interpret Grand Slam? You think he's the dry track is the tick?
Absolutely. Dry track is the tick. You've got to put him in. Grand Slam goes in the quaddie. Montine goes in the quaddie. And the other one that I'm putting in the quaddie is Flash Feeling, just because he's a little bit on the up. And Sads wouldn't have put him in this race if he didn't think he was up to it, because there's plenty of other options for Flash Feeling coming up. I think this is more than a throw at the stumps. But as far as a bet in the race is concerned, I think Montine number 7 for me.
All right. We are sort of running low on time, but we'll get everything in. We might have a crack at Aaron Lang. We'll take a short break. We'll come back and have a look at the guineas, have a quick chat to Aaron Lang, and then we'll wrap this up, and then we'll have a quick look at the Winter Bottom, and we'll have a chat to our good mate Michael Prozenik from Supreme Caravans as well. We'll fit it all in, Shark. Don't you worry.
Inside the weekend's biggest races, RSN 927's Racing Pulse and Friday Form Focus.
17 minutes past 10, one of the most intriguing long shots on the day is Marxist in the Sandown Guineas. It's $41, but it's a last start 10-length maiden winner at Pakenham, and the horse that beat it at its previous start, Magic Time, won during Cup Week. I wonder, are we ignoring this 10-length winner at our peril? The trainer of Marxist is Aaron Lang, and he's going to let us know whether we shouldn't be ignoring Marxist or not. G'day, Aaron. How are you, mate?
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, good. How are you?
No, not too bad. Just tried to kind of get into Cranbourne to have some reception instead of the farm this time.
Oh, no worries. Hey, I heard Benny Asghari on racing.com last night with his pen poised above Marxist and not knowing quite what to make of Marxist in the Guineas. Do we take the 10-length win on face value, or do we look at the rising class? What's your take on this big challenge you've set Marxist in the Guineas?
I was skewing it, actually. Let the cat out of the bag. We were liking the 40-1 on.
it's now 34 and shortening.
Yeah, well, you know, we're spewing about that. But I think she deserves a crack. I know it wasn't the hottest field at Cranbourne. Pakenham, when she won. But she sort of did it fairly well, and she was still a little bit for her to learn. She was a bit green late, and she you know, wanted to sort of have a wander about, and we've since threw the visors on at home and gave her a little bit of work, and she's improved a fair bit. So, yeah, I thought she warrants having a little crack at something like that while she's still three.
A 10-length win's a 10-length win, though, Aaron, isn't it? Like, you don't go and win by 10 if you haven't got, you know, better than average ability. And it's the Sandanginnies, the way it sits now on the calendar, you can have a little throw at the stumps with a filly like this.
Yeah, I think so. Like, because, you know, with her page, her mother's a half to a Group 1 winner. Like, she sort of only really has to run top four in it, and it's sort of, you know, mission complete in a way for us, because then she's, you know, worth a little bit more, you know, a little bit of money as a brood mare once she's finished. So, yeah, I thought she deserved a little crack. So we're going to, get in there and have a dip at it.
She seems like, for a capitalist, that she's just going to stretch and stretch. Barrier 15, how do you...
At first I was at home and refreshing the phone like every 3 seconds to find the barrier. Then when it finally came out, I felt like pegging the phone through the wall. And then I had a scan, sort of had a look at the speed map and figured out where I thought everything was going to line. It probably ends up not too bad a thing, I think. There's not a heap of speed in the race. I feel like Atmosphere will probably go forward. It throws barrier 8. So hopefully we can sort of just jump well and sort of follow him across and sit outside him. And fingers crossed we don't get too, you know, harassed in front. But, yeah, pretty much that'll be the plan, I would have thought.
Well, Aaron, funny things happen in Sandanginnies. I remember when Sender won at 150-1. I remember when Peep on the Sly knocked off Saintly in a Sandanginnies. So it's one of those races where a little girl like Marxis might come along and show them a thing or two.
Yeah, I hope so. She probably the thing that worries us the most would be the track. It'll be pretty hard by the end of the day, I would have thought. So I'm not sure exactly how she'll cope with that. But, we'll find out tomorrow. That's our biggest worry, I would have thought.
Absolutely. All right, mate. Well, good luck. She's certainly an interesting runner.
Cheers. Thank you.
Aaron Lang there. Shark, you and I were talking earlier about post-COVID and what people are doing and hitting the highways and coming into the summer months. And I reckon it'll be Caravan City all around Australia. And Supreme Caravans has kindly become one of our sponsors, and we're very grateful for that. And just wanted to get Michael Prosnick from Supreme Caravans on the line to have a chat about Supreme Caravans and the caravan lifestyle. And he's on the line now. G'day, Michael.
G'day, Matt. How are you?
Very well. Are you selling a lot of caravans at the moment?
Yeah, selling and delivering them. Coming up to Christmas, so, everyone's running around like headless chooks trying to get all the vans out and get everyone on the road for Chrissy.
It's a great Australian holiday, isn't it, Michael? Particularly around summer to autumn months when the weather's, relatively stable. Tow the caravan out into the bush or to the beach or to a river somewhere. It's perfect.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially, after COVID, everyone being locked up. And even in the winter months, we see a lot of people from down south head north try and get out of the cold. But it's been an interesting couple of years.
I remember years ago in high school, a mate had an old, their family had an old clapped out caravan in the front yard, and it sort of became a bit of a DOS house for all the friends, on weekends and everything else.
My sister studied for year 12 in our caravan.
There you go. But they've come a long way, haven't they? They're pretty luxurious, these models you've got now.
Oh, yeah. They've got full ensuite, reverse cycle heater and cooler. They've got lithium systems, battery systems, free camping. You can go off grid for a few days or a few months if you want.
Are they kind of? We need one. We need a mobile studio for RSN for our outside broadcast. So we'll work towards that aim. But do most people need the caravan to be crafted to their own desires and their own lifestyle? Is each caravan basically different?
I mean, they're all basically the same. But you either. There's really two, I put in two categories. You're either, someone who goes to the caravan parks and just spends most of the time on the blacktop, on the tar. And then there's your free campers who like to go off-road a little bit more. So they do the same thing. It's just, they change a bit with suspension and the capabilities with the off-road. But, generally all of them have torque and showers. It's just where you want to go with the caravan. So that's it. That's a bit of a choice, when making that decision. Depends what you want to do. So, but we can cater for both.
Has it been a bit of a post-COVID release that people have really clamoured for caravans because of two difficult years? Is it as busy now as it's ever been?
Yeah, it definitely is. People, people were couldn't go overseas and they couldn't travel, so they've got this caravan in their front driveway when they can get in whenever they want and head off, go down the Murray or the beach or head up wherever they want to go. So it is becoming, there definitely is a massive influx in sales, but it is getting a bit more steady now. It's calming down, and now we're just trying to focus on getting the vans out for Christmas. So we've got 4 dealerships up the East Coast, so we've got to feed a few dealerships and get everyone away for Chrissy.
And I believe there's some good deals on at the moment as well for those listeners who are interested. And I think you're a bit of a gun tipster as well, so we might even get a little tip from you, Michael, as well. So if you've got a tip for Zipping Stakes Day or anywhere else around Australia, wherever there's a caravan park nearby, give us a tip. And for those who have been listening and are curious and have always wanted to either upgrade or get a caravan, what's the best way to get in contact with Supreme Caravans?
So our dealerships are AustralianCaravanCentre.com.au. You can Google us or Facebook, Instagram. It'll link you all back to our Supreme product. But like I said, the month of December, anything with a 22 plate, we're keen to talk a deal. And I'm not probably the best person for tips. My brother Rob would have been a bit better. But I've got, for the Zipping Classic, Vow and Declare. I've seen that was a favourite, so I thought I'd put that one in there.
Go with the strength. Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, good on you, mate. I know as you say, a very busy time of year, especially post-lockdown. So good luck with the summer season and look forward to chatting again with you soon at Supreme Caravans.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
Michael Prosnick there from Supreme. Now, Shark.
Yes, mate.
Summon Stakes, and we'll have a little squiz at the winter bottom, and then we'll go to the guru from Horsham, of course, Josh.
Of course. Summon Stakes, tough way to finish. Roots, favourite, good last time, top of the ground horse, got the job done, ran down a really nice filly in Climbing Star. Just had her head on the side, that last 200, which I'm just wondering if that means she's maybe coming to the end of it. Torrigine, good to see Matty Williams with another nice horse. Just not helped at all by the draw here with 13. The horse I like is Mac and Cheese, number 5. Third up, target race.
Flying.
Yep. Been to the mile once before. Won by 3 lengths and won really easily. I think she's building towards a win. And again, you're getting each way odds about a horse that's fresh on the scene. And we can't say that about many of these. They've been up and whacking away through the majority of the spring. So I think Mac and Cheese for me, she's the one. My Whisper goes in the quaddy. So does Torrigine. So does Roots.
All right. No worries. Roots, incidentally, is named after our mate, Chris Roots.
Is it really?
Did you know that? No, it definitely is named after Chris Roots.
Are you sure?
Dead set.
Oh, press statement. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Dead set named after the great man.
Arctic Success. Big Brown. Oh, yeah. Righto. I see it.
Yeah. All right. Now, the Winterbottom is race 8 at Ascot tomorrow. They are wandering to the boxes for the first at Healesville in about 3 minutes. So we've got
first
3 minutes.
First at Healesville? Have we spoken that long today?
Yeah, we have. Oh. Now, this is
making your life easy.
Yeah. You know what I like about the Winterbottom is that there's a lovely injection of Eastern States horses.
Yeah.
It's been tricky to get around, and obviously we haven't got nothing happening in Hong Kong and so on, and no runners in Japan Cup, but good to give us a little bit of interest in the West. So just on the market, Rothfire from Queensland. Robert Heathcote's going to be our guest, hopefully, on Cracking the Codes tomorrow. One of the guests, our Gallup's guest. Rothfire is at $5. $5.50, number 2, Valana Cummings. 4, Elite Street Local, $6.50. $10, This Will Test You. Michael Pateman trains. The Astrologist for the Corsons is at $11, as is Miss Contiki for Simon Miller. $12, Palili, who's an interesting runner. Red Can Man, Kiss on All Four Cheeks are all in the race. So, good addition. Is it Rothfire's to lose?
I think it is. I think it's Rothfire's to lose. I have really liked watching him come back in such great form this campaign after injury and everything else. And, he put the writing on the wall in Brisbane during the winter, didn't he, that he may be able to claim another big race. I was on him in the Manicato. It was no match for Bella Nipotina. VRC Classic, it wasn't bad. He just got run down late, didn't he? By some horses that probably had a softer run. I think he can go and win this and emulate Buffering for Rob Heathcote, who won it a few years ago now.
Absolutely,
he won it on, was it Ben Ascari's wedding? And I watched it with a couple of mates of his. out at the pre-drinks before the reception. We're all back to buffering.
Oh, so, there you go.
Must be about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, well, there you go. Hey, Josh from Horsham's on the line to give us his thoughts. I wonder if he's a Rothfire man. How are you, Joshy?
I'm very, very well. How you going, guys?
Good. Couldn't be better. What are you going to tip us this weekend?
Just a couple this weekend. Nothing jumping off the page at me. So we'll go to Mowi Saturday, race one, number 7, Roaring Success. Now, I think this will be an each-way play. It had one start as a 2-year-old. Forget it ever ran. It was wide, and it gave in, and they tipped it straight out after it. It's had a couple of jump outs, one very quiet, and they shook it up the last one, and it responded well. So you'd want each way price to play it, but if you sort of get your $9 or $10, I think you can back it each way. That's Mowi race one, number 7.
Yep.
Then we'll go to Traralgon on Sunday, race 4, number 7, Aperitivo. Team Hazer got this one. It was 5th on debut behind Skidamarink, which reads pretty well for a Traralgon maiden, and it ran on pretty good from the back last start. Mickey D lost the whip, which didn't help, but they were only a second outside of the race record time there, I think, which is that's stupid for a maiden class. So gets another 200 metres here. So like that one, race 4, number 7.
All righty, no worries. Just recap: race 4, number 7 at Traralgon, and the first one, race 1, number 7 at
Mowi.
Mowi.
And one more. There's a horse called Chock-a-Block that's going to make its debut either Monday at Kyneton or Tuesday at Ararat. It'll be winning.
All right, we'll keep an eye out for it. Good on you, Joshy.
Go well, boys.
Josh from Horsham. Mick, Sharky, let's sum up your thoughts on the weekend. Obviously, we're going to be very Caulfield-centric. What's your little game plan?
Right, I'm going to back race 8, King's Consort, each way, and I'm also going to back race 9, Mac and Cheese, each way. They're my bets tomorrow. That's the way I'm going to be playing, Matty.
You don't map out quaddies, do you?
Yeah, I've got a quaddie for you.
All right, then.
1, 6, 7, 12. 1, 4, 7, 9, 1, 3, 12, 13, 3, 5, 7, 8.
And if that was too quick for you to keep up, we will put Sharky's quaddies and best and Josh from Horsham's best up on the website under the RSN Twitter handle. Hey, Shark, go home and have a snooze on the couch.
I will, Matty. Thank you. Have a good weekend, everybody.
You too. It's 28 minutes to 11. When we come back, we're going to do the fast form at Wodonga and Cranbourne with Rick McIntosh and Terry Bailey.